Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Eddie.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. Ha ha ha. You screwed up. You clicked the wrong show. You thought this was the New York Times Daily. Stuck now. That's like the most popular podcast on the market. You guys laugh.
But New York Times Daily?
Yeah, you didn't know that, did you?
I subscribe.
Their numbers are probably pumped because they publish every day. We should start doing that. Streaming Things Daily. Because the weekly thing's going so well. We've done it 19 times in a row.
Hey,
I think we can
Happy
up our
19,
game.
Guys.
Yeah, what are we going to celebrate? How are we going to celebrate?
I figured we would celebrate on 20, not.
Well, we march.
Cider here if y'all want to get litty.
We march to a different tune here at Streaming That's Things, true. Steve, as everyone knows.
We prefer odd numbers.
Happy 19th. And then again on 29.
Oh, we should have celebrated on the 13th.
Oh, damn. Man. I can't wait till episode 69.
Oh, my God. What a weird celebration that's going to be.
Yeah.
Because we're friends. If you've never listened to the show before, you're in for a treat. We are amazing. We are slowly approaching.
Let me toot my own horn here.
We are slowly approaching New York Times level listenership. And you are in on the ground. Like the,
we're coming for you, New York Times.
The fucking basement of that.
Nipping on their heels.
So welcome to the next startup. Tonight's episode is a little bit of a plot twist, which is related to its theme. So we.
What a twist.
We told all of our listeners that tonight.
A dozen of you.
Yes. Well, I think.
New York's
dozens
numbers.
Generous. We told everyone that we were going to discuss the new Saul movie, Spiral, from the Book of Saul, starring Chris Rock and I believe Samuel L. Jackson. It could be his cousin, Samuel P. Jackson. I could be getting those mixed up. It's like a Paul Anderson, Paul W.S. Anderson situation.
But much like the title of that movie, that plan sure has spiraled out of control.
We have not seen Saul. Seesaw? Nobody?
We didn't see Saul.
Well, I've seen Saul.
So here's what happened. It's very understandable. Longtime listeners of the show will see nothing amiss in our inability to predict this evening's events. However, for new listeners, what happened was we assumed that because of the COVID that we would be able to stream, a la Streaming Things, Spiral from the Book of Saul. In the glory of our own homes. And yet it is only in theaters for once. I mean, this is like one of the first times it's happened that you couldn't actually just watch a movie from
that
the couch.
That is Jigsaw's game, dude. You want to play a game? Go try not to get COVID in the theater.
Yeah, right, right.
Go to a movie theater and try not to die. There are going to be a ton of people without masks on. You have spent your life standing in the shadows. Go out.
I paid the CDC to make a false claim.
Eat amongst those who think the election was a fraud.
Oh, God.
Or, so... not, I mean, we're all fully vaccinated. We would have gladly went to the theater and watched Saw, Saw. But we didn't know that was a thing.
That we needed to wait time for that.
Last minute, I literally sat on the fucking couch, turned on my Apple TV with Andy and cycled through and went, oh no. He's like, what's the problem, buddy? I'm like, I mean, it would definitely be on the front page. I think we have an issue here. And he like fruitlessly started to Google. And I'm like, it's not here. What are we going to do? So instead, what we're going to do, inspired by those events, is discuss our favorite movie theater memories and some of our worst movie theater memories, because no one is happier than us that movie theaters are back on the rise. That,
they're back, baby.
That movies are only available in theaters. We support that.
We don't want to go, but we support it.
We just weren't prepared. I didn't really want to pop my cherry first time to a theater since Uncut Gems on Spiral from the Book of Saul necessarily. Not that there's anything wrong with that. If you went, wonderful. But if you came here looking for an in-depth discussion and review of Spiral from the Book of Saul, you're not going to get it.
It's probably pretty good.
We're going to have a philosophical discussion about movie theaters themselves instead.
Yeah, we're going to have a better episode because let me give you a little preview, guys.
Preview them, Steve.
There's some great stories coming up about our favorite and least favorite movie theater experiences, because we all got them. We've all been to the theater to watch whatever we love, and either we're with people we love and we have a magical experience watching a big budget blockbuster open, or we've gone to see a small art house film and next to us is some old lady who just doesn't get it. And hilarity ensues. So we're going to have a lot of personal stories, and that gets me excited. I'm more excited about that than Saul, personally.
Yeah, I agree with you, Steve. I support it. I support us. So you all are lucky that this has happened yet again.
Congratulations.
But before all that, let's do what we usually do and talk about what we've been streaming since last we met. Let's delve into a little segment we like to call Crossing Streams. Andy, what have you been up to? What you been streaming?
So I've been streaming a couple of things that after our conversation about comfort foods, I super wanted to watch some of those things. So first thing that I streamed was Hot Fuzz, the Great Edgar movie. Wright movie, starring Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, written by Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg. That movie is probably the most rewatchable movie of all time. Literally every time I watch it, I see something new, catch on to something new. This time when I was watching it, in the opening monologue where Simon Pegg's character, Nicholas Angel, is talking about his career in the police service, I noticed that when he describes it as the police service, he enunciates the service part. And it's a baby little foreshadow moment where later when he's talking to Danny, Nick Frost's character, he says, we can't call it the police force. That's too aggressive. We call it the police service.
Okay.
And so there, and that comes up a couple of times. He also mentions it like to his ex-girlfriend, Kate Paid, played by a masked Kate Blanchett. He says that they have to call it the service. But the tiny little, like in the script, it's definitely in italics. Like he says, the San Francisco Police Service.
Yeah, right.
And I was
that's such a tight script.
Dude, everything about that script is foreshadowed a million different ways ahead of time. Like it is the tightest script ever. One of the most rewatchable things.
That's how I like my scripts. I like them toit scripts.
Toit
scripts.
I get toyered if they're not toit.
I like my scripts toit.
I've told you 33 times that that's what I like.
Can't wait till you turn 33.
I'm going to say that all year.
I'm
every
dirty
day.
Tree.
You're a dirty tree? I said, I'm dirty tree. So then after that, then I was like, oh, I love comfort food movies. And now I rewatched World War Z. Because
God damn it, Andy.
Son of a bitch.
Because I can't help myself.
Steve, what have you been doing?
So World War Z, I waxed lyrically about it before. It's a comfort food movie for me. Go watch it. It's pretty good. Other than that, I bought and completely binged through Resident Evil 8, the new Capcom horror game that came
Evil
out.
Resident Evil 8.
Unfortunately, they do not pull the old Resident Evil openings title screen where it goes Resident Evil.
Like, that's one of my favorite things.
Resident Evil 8.
It would have been Village. Like, you can't say Village and sound menacing.
5 was the best one because he goes like, Fave.
Fave. Dirty tree.
Resident Evil, dirty tree.
I thought this was going to be a scary game, not an awesome game.
So Resident Evil 8 is a continuation of the story of Ethan Winters.
Mila Jovovich?
From Resident Evil 7 Biohazard, where it's this guy, kind of a no-name, no-face guy. It's Ethan, bizarre. Right? It's Ethan. Yeah, Ethan Winters. He is surrounded by wonderful, incredibly directed, excellent voice acting cast people that do an amazing job. And he is the worst direction or written or something character ever, where it's like the super menacing, like Lady Dimitrescu that everybody loved and everybody was thirsting over on Twitter.
That's the big woman.
That's the 7 foot tall woman running around the castle and stuff. Like, she's amazing. Like, the direction, the writing for her is super good. It's a very unsettling environment. Everything is excellent. And she'll say something super menacing, like, I'm going to come and get you. He's like, yeah, I bet you fucking will, you bitch. And it's like, what? Like, everything that comes out of that dude's mouth is fucking dumb, man.
That sounds like me when I'm in a haunted house.
Right.
We're like, Pooh, I'm going to scare you. Yeah, no, you won't, asshole. Out of my way. I want to get through this.
Everybody sounds like a Chad standing in line at Kings Island during their Halloween haunt. You know what I mean? Like, he ain't going to fucking scare me. So my problems with the protagonist aside, and it is a seriously deep-seated issue for that game. It is so bad. And it detracts deeply from the horror. Just, he needs to be a silent protagonist. Just grunt when you die, and that's all he needs. But
like that game, the original Grand Theft Autos.
Sure, yeah,
100%. Or Dead Space, the first Dead Space.
That's much more relevant.
Yeah, silent protagonists abound in games, and he needs to be one.
There's a myriad of them, you could say.
It's awful.
There are
plethora.
A smorgasbord.
Out of many one.
But
this unum silent protagonist.
My problems with the protagonist notwithstanding, some of the scares in that game are fucking phenomenal. I don't want to go into spoilers. I don't know how many of our listeners are like deep gamers, but I like to imagine that they'd be my homies.
We've been talking about video games more and more. I don't know that they've ever been brought up in our listeners' emails to us. So we hope you appreciate it.
Yeah. It's not going to stop.
Spoiler, it's going to continue when it gets to me.
Right. We are who we are.
But the game is broken up into several like set piece areas. And each area kind of has its own big bad. And there's like one overarching bad, kind of like a general and a bunch of lieutenants. A la like a Ubisoft game or something, you know what I mean? Only it's not like an open world, go take out each lieutenant to get to the big bad. It's a linear story, but through that story, you are taken to these different locations. I don't want to get into spoilers about it, but each section kind of has a slightly different style of gameplay. And in the second section, there's very little to no like gunplay.
Is that the ones I've been seeing a lot of videos of, where it's like just running through a house with first person trying to.
So it is all first person. They began that with Resident Evil 7. They transitioned to first person rather than third over the shoulder or fixed camera from 1 through 3. But in the second section, you are going through a house, and the big bad in that area is kind of like this creepy marionette lady. And so there's a bunch of dolls and stuff. But that area is super fucking unsettling. And you have to like, at one point you're like looking over this big marionette doll looking thing that looks like your wife, and like opening its mouth and turning its eyeballs and stuff.
What's she doing in that game?
Like there's no monster there or anything, but it's just the most unsettling thing to like be taking apart this fucking doll. Like, it's bizarre. And there is a monster in that area that I'm not going to spoil, but it's fucking
I think I've seen it
crazy.
And it's terrible.
It is terrifying. And
I saw Dr. Disrespect get eaten by it. His reaction was hilarious.
Dude, it's super Dr. fucked
Disrespect?
Up.
You don't know him?
No.
He's a very prominent.
He wears a mullet wig and sunglasses and has a mustache. He got banned from Twitch recently, but he's still really successful.
Oh, I'm like, even though I play video games, Twitch and streaming is like something I'm not a part of. I knew nothing about that world.
Gotcha. Yeah, he's a successful guy. He's a very good gamer. Hmm. Big into like battle royales and stuff. But anyway, the story kind of like the pacing kind of falls apart towards the end of it. And but overall, like, it had some genuinely excellent scares. And I burned through it super fast because I wanted to be done with it in time for what Steve's going to talk about. And but then I made the executive decision that I'm actually broke, and so I can't afford to buy the game that Steve's about to talk about, which is Mass Effect. But so I burned through it in like 2 days, and I'm like sitting there twiddling my thumbs waiting for Mass Effect to come out. And then so, I was like, yeah, I can't afford this right now.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but when I think of Resident Evil, now I haven't played a lot of Resident Evil games. I think I've played 5 and 4.
4 is amazing. 5 is where they turned into like an action game.
But it's mostly always been like zombies and all that shit. But everything I've seen of 8 is a lot more like Brothers Grimm, where it's like werewolves and vampires. Mm-hmm. Are there, is that the case?
It is very, it is kind of Brothers Grimm fairy tale-ish type of area. And it actually, the story opens, when you press start, it opens with a fairy tale book, like a kind of a montage thing a la like the, oh shoot, what are they called? The Harry Potter book that Hermione is gifted by Dumbledore. The stories that...
The Necronomicon.
Not the Necronomicon.
Fuck, that was my guess.
But do you guys know what I'm talking about?
The Book
about?
Of the Dead.
The book that she's given.
A grimoire.
If anyone like, was going to know it, it would be our resident Harry Potter expert, Andy.
Yeah, no. it's going to come to me eventually at some point while you guys are talking. I'm going to burst in with what it's called. But anyway, so it does open with this like animated fairy book story thing, or fairy tale story
book. Fairy book.
Fairy book.
Come read amongst my fairies.
And so, yes, books. There are myriad, if you will, monsters throughout. There are lycans, which are like werewolf people. There are vampires. There are other things too. And there's like kind of a general story reason for it. But the story in Resident Evil has always been like complete
batshit crazy.
As long as there is a residence and some evil,
they can get away
with it. It is titularly acceptable.
Ideally,
and if I could just pick up a green plant that's preferably in a pot and eat it, it would heal my health.
Oh, dude, they do insane shit with that now. Like at one point in Resident Evil 7, you like literally get your hand cut off and you just staple it back on and pour some shit on it. And it's like, it's good to go again.
That's just science.
Right.
Come on,
that's
man.
Just, I mean, I don't have my degree in medical school, but I know that works.
But yeah, I mean, if you can stand horror games, and I'm not huge into them, like as much as I love horror movies, horror games freak me out. So I don't play them super often, but Resident Evil 8, I decided I wanted to jump in.
Yeah, when I found out that it was a lot more, you know, fairy tale-esque in terms of the enemy, and it has like a very Eastern European look to it, like the setting, like that interest me, because I like I said, I'm not super into Resident Evil games, and like zombie games are a dime a dozen anymore, so it's hard to get super excited about them. So when I read that, I'm like, oh, maybe I'll play that, and then I was like, no,
maybe I won't.
Maybe when it's super cheap.
Maybe when it's super cheap, I'll pick it up. But
I want to play it. And didn't they remaster Resident Evil 2?
They remade it, two and three, and especially the 2 remake is supposed to be absolutely phenomenal. I have not played it, but I've heard it is fantastic. The reason I didn't play it, and this is one of the things that I hate about horror games and why I don't play them super often, is I can't stand games, especially horror games, where there is an enemy that you can't kill. And in Resident Evil 2, famously, there is Mr. X, who is this giant hulking zombie man that just chases you the entire game.
3 has one too.
And, yeah, the Nemesis. You can't kill him. You can just do damage and get away. And so it's
but you can like hear him coming. Cause
it's just like this anxiety that is like at any given moment, he's going to come lurching through the fucking wall. Like here, I'm coming like fucking Kool-Aid man. Like I'm here. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I'm going to play that eventually, but yeah, 2 and 3 got remade, and then supposedly 4 is next, and 4 is like the most famous heralded Resident Evil game of all time.
So. Isn't that Code Veronica?
No. I think Code Veronica did come after between
the Dreamcast 3 and 4,
but I mean, there's been a shitload of.
Oh, so that doesn't count as 4.
Code Veronica's not, like no. A spinoff.
Oh, okay.
You actually were super fucking into 4 back in the day, and I remember talking to you about this, and you didn't remember this, but you played the fuck out of 4. And I remember you running around as Leon in 4, and you had like played the shit out of that game. Like you had every gun and like max ammo, and we're just running around and stuff. And I talked to you about that, and you're like, I don't remember that.
I have no memory of that place.
Yeah, it's crazy.
At all. But I was on a lot of drugs back then.
Do you remember, so there's a YouTube account. I think they're still active, but like I haven't paid attention to them in probably 12 to 15 years, but it's Mega64 is the name of the account. What they got famous for is they would take scenarios from video games and then go out in the real world and like do them in the real world and just cool. Someone would videotape the person dressed up from afar and just see how people reacted. And one of my favorite episodes they did was they did the merchant from Resident Evil 4, which is like this hooded, creepy looking character. And he's like at like a outside of a pizza place. And there's people like waiting in line to like order their pizza. It's like you go to a window, order a slice and you go. And he would just like walk up, "What are you buying?" He's like doing the weird.
I do remember the game now. Selling? You could buy like stocks for your pistol and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It was great because like
you said, deal with like inventory management. Like I got to rotate my gun this way so I can fit in that plant and stuff.
Oh yeah, that's right. But yeah, I love that because that episode, the cops get called on him.
You think he's a drug dealer?
And the cops show up and he's like, "What are you buying?" "I buy it at a high price."
But yeah, that's what I've been streaming.
Steve, what have you been up to, buddy?
Well, before we get into the main event, I'll run through a couple things that I've streamed. TV show wise, I continue watching Star Wars: The Bad Batch. That show decreases in quality with each passing episode.
I made a good decision.
Yeah, there's three episodes out. They become significantly shorter. The most recent episode is only 27 minutes long, and they become less and less. They're just worse.
Less and less worthy of time. I got it.
They're worse and worse as they continue. I also started watching season 2 of Mythic Quest on Apple TV Plus.
Oh yeah, I watched that too. It's super good.
It's a lot better because famously, I a couple episodes I watched the first season and talked about how I wasn't super into it, but I loved episode 4.
Yeah, I was so surprised you didn't absolutely love that show.
I think whatever they did between seasons works because all the episodes that have come out this season so far, I think there's 3. Are great. I've loved every episode since. I think they've done a slight dynamic change where the two leads aren't antagonizing each other as often. So it's less them just screaming at each other every episode. The scary intern, I forget her name. She's like super intense and is always like,
"I'll kill you, pigs."
Yeah. They paired her with, I can only call this guy Abed.
Danny Pudi,
because he's Abed from Community, but that's not his character in here. And their dynamic is much better served than
her and David Hornsby.
David Hornsby, who was like a pushover. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and that's just a gorgeously filmed show. Like I was watching it and just like the cinematography, even though it's a comedy about people in a game development company, like there's some great camera work and production quality to it. It's a beautiful show. So yeah, check it out. I'm really, really enjoying that a lot more than the first season. But the real thing I'm here to talk about to you guys, I mentioned on my comfort foods last week, one of my comfort foods was Mass Effect. Now I had not been able to play any of the Mass Effect games for a while because of, you know, technological limitations. Well, not anymore, because Friday they released the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, which is a remaster of the original 3 Mass Effect games on PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, and Xbox, and wherever else you get video games, PC, you know, whatever.
BioWare heard your cries.
They heard my cries, and they were like, "Let us give him his desires.
Suckle at the teat of Mass Effect, Steven."
And it is...
Come, suckle.
Oh, I don't like those two words together.
I don't either. What the fuck, Andy?
I'm so sorry. But no, it's great. And it, like... So I've started with 1 because, as I mentioned before, I've only played the first Mass Effect game once, but I've played 2 and 3 9 times each, you know? So I was like, well, I got to start a new character and I'm going to take the character through the entire trilogy. It's going to be a blast. And the game has never looked better. It's never played better. They even have like a cool Marvel-esque, you know, like Marvel starts and you see all the different characters before the Marvel logo appears. Now they did that with BioWare, but now it's all the Mass Effect characters and
nice. As
a Mass Effect fan.
Did they leave out Anthem?
No, it's purely Mass Effect characters. Okay. Yeah, it's all Mass Effect characters and then the BioWare logo. So as a huge fan of the franchise, I was like, yay. That being said,
Tales of the Beetle the Bard.
What?
Oh, the book.
Is that the book?
Hermione's book in Harry Potter's Tales of Beetle the Bard. That's how they find
Listeners
out about
Listeners, we're at 12 minutes since that reference, and it finally caught up to Andy.
Sorry, go on.
But no, like, again, I haven't played Mass Effect in a long time. The first game, I've only played once, and it's funny watching it because I know so well what 2 and 3 are like. It's so funny playing Mass Effect 1. just how much of it, it feels like an incomplete game where it almost feels like an alpha of the better ideas that they would extrapolate upon and make concrete in the sequels. So like there's like the side missions aren't really captivating. There's a lot of like aimless, you're in the Manco vehicle. You can take this vehicle and go and explore planets and stuff. And that seems so aimless and there's no real direction to it, you know? But I mean, the writing and the stories there, some of the voice actors even don't seem to have like really quite landed on like what the character is until the second game. They kind of really like, this is who they are. So it's neat to kind of see the humble beginnings of the franchise to where I know the heights it comes to in the subsequent sequels. One thing I found funny that because I'm playing this game now in 2021 and I'm in a different place.
Is that the year? Sorry,
guys. It's 20, yes. And I'm in a different place now than I was when I first played this game in 2010, 2011. And it's fascinating to me how some things are, you know, I'm reacting to some things that I wasn't before. For instance, okay, so there's a character. She's one of the first companions you can have in the game. Her name's Ashley Williams. She's this like, she's like a jingoistic female Marine that kind of joins you. And she's like, yes, sir, you know, grunt. She's a multifaceted character. But even back then when I first, and she got this criticism back then as well, was everyone would, the joke was Ashley's racist. Ashley's the racist character because she was the one that's like, I don't think we can trust these aliens, sir. And like, she makes some weird comments like, we can't trust all these like googly eyed monsters on this ship. And it's stuff like that. And I was like, God damn, Ashley, you're fucking racist. Like, I know you're not being racist towards humans, but
you go use that water fountain.
Yeah. What? It's like, she's almost there. So I knew that going in. And that's why, like, I never really like had Ashley come along with me. I'm like, oh, I'm going on a diplomatic mission in this planet. I'm not bringing the fucking racist with me. Who's going to look at the Krogans and be like, hey, wide eyes, look at me here. You know, and it's just like, Jesus Christ, calm down. But in today's lens, she's so much worse.
Oh, no.
Because like, there's a point where you can get to know your, and that's one of the great things about the game franchise is you can really get to know your companions. Like, you talk to them, you get to know who they are, you go on missions to help them with stuff. And so I'm talking to her and she's telling me about her backstory and how she has like sisters and she loves her sisters. And she's telling the story of like, yeah, I had to take care of my sister one time because a boyfriend of hers was getting a little too handsy and she pushed him away. And I went over to help her to make sure that he didn't try anything ever again. And the response I gave her as my character was like, no, was no means no. And Shepard's like, well, if he truly loved her, he would respect her wishes and understand that no means no. Ashley responds, yeah, but if he didn't try to get a little handsy, I would wonder something about him. You know what I mean? I was like, fuck, what the hell? Ashley, come on. And then later on, you accept an alien on your crew named Liara. She's the blue. She's like the iconic blue woman. And in the world of the game, that race of aliens has like a stereotype about them where like, oh, all the Asari, that's the name of their species. All the Asaris are like, they're basically loose women. You know, they have this stereotype and Liara as a character kind of talks about like how that's not true. But when you talk to Ashley about, oh, what do you think about Liara? She's like, maybe we should ask her about her sex life, huh? And gets like, starts slut shaming her. And it's like, you just met her. Like, seriously, like that character's awful. Like, she would have stormed the Capitol if she was a real character.
100%, you know what I mean? Right.
But like, I keep her around as a crew member because she is multifaceted. And throughout the three games, she kind of learns her lesson and becomes a better character. But man, in the beginning, you're like, geez, you're worse than I remember. Holy cow. But I'm having a blast. I can't wait to, you know, go through these games I love so much. If you've never played Mass Effect, I encourage you to get into it and try it out for yourself. If you play the first game, you're like, wow, the controls are really, really dated. Because it is. It's an almost 15-year-old game. I would just say, just go to number two. Go to number two. Number two is probably my favorite game of all time. And I think there's a good refresher. If you skip number two, they have like an introductory course for people who didn't play the first one.
That's interesting because the first one's the only one I ever beat. And I love the shit out of it. Two I played, but I never finished. So I never played three because I didn't finish two.
Oh, man. Two might be my favorite game of all time. Storyline wise, it's so good. The difference is just the gameplay, like the gunplay that happens in one is so unrefined and loosey goosey, and the character powers like are so hit or miss. Like you'll aim at a enemy would be like, hey, Liara, take out his shields. And she'd be like, okay. And just like, she'll shoot the wall directly in front of her. And it's like, no, he's over there, idiot. But like in the subsequent sequels, you have much more control over where they're shooting their stuff at. So like, I'm looking forward to that. That's the only reason like it's harder to go back to the first game for me, because it feels the most dated. I mean, it came out in 2007. So of course
it is. It better now though with what they've done with AI, or did they just change the graphics?
It is better, but the shortcomings are still there.
I remember because video game in the beginnings of like true AI in video games, like the most famous example I can think of is Natalia, the character from GoldenEye 64, the James Bond. Did you play that game?
Yeah.
Do you remember her? So there were all these
stand in the middle of the room.
There were all these missions where you lost the level if she died. And so you'd be like battling all these enemies. You'd kill like dozens of people and turn around and she would just be jogging into the corner. And you'd be like, my dad used to play the game and he was in his 50s at the time. And, you know, he didn't have me until he was in his late 30s. And I'm just like, he was in his, you know, late 40s maybe, but. Yeah, he'd never really played any video games ever, except like the original NES football games, you know, Madden with me and stuff. And I just hear him from the other room. I'd go to get a root beer or something. I hear him, you dumb fucking, you know? I'm just like, Dad, what's the matter? This fucking chick, you know, and that's what it made me think of when you said that she was shooting the wall. Oh, good times.
Yeah, because like what it is there's an enemy and you're like, shoot that enemy, but she's shooting in a direct line of sight, but there's like a box in between her and that person. So she's shooting the box.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Which I get it.
Yeah.
That's and how I am.
It's, but yeah, like I said,
shortest distance between two points. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
It looks better. It plays better. There is a little bit more like they upgraded the guns feel similar to how they feel in the other game, but there's definitely the shortcomings of the original game is still present.
Right.
I'm still excited to play it when I am no longer broke.
Yeah.
Chris?
I'm going to check it out eventually, maybe. I let all of our listeners down, and you too. So I would love to say that with Love, Death, and Robots being one of the best things that I've seen in the past 5 years, that season two dropping finally, I could say I watched all of them and talked to you at great length about those new episodes. I did not find the time to watch that yet. So that'll be for next week, but I am aware of it and I'm sorry because I'm very excited. I actually would like to go home and watch those tonight.
I'm going to watch those too.
I was also a huge fan of Mythic Quest, and I watched the pandemic special and the recent between season special that they made. I don't think I ever talked about that.
The banquet
with like the tournament. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That was a good one.
But I haven't watched season two yet, so I'm very upset with myself for that. But I did watch when Andy and I were hanging out and we couldn't watch Spiral from the Book of Saul. We decided to watch an Olive Branch version of that. And so we watched the original Saul film from 2004, which I had not seen since 2004. And apparently Andy had seen a few times. And all I remembered was that, you know, because we would have been sophomores in high school, mm-hmm, I think, when that came out. So that it made a big splash. It's a very unique movie. I can see it for what it was at the time. Do you know what I mean?
That movie made James Wan. Like, that's why he is the superstar director that he is now.
It was very unique for the time. I remember when it came out, people were like, whoa, it's so different.
Lee Whannell wrote it with James Wan, and it was directed by James Wan, director of what? All the
Aquaman, a bunch of the Fast and Furious
Conjuring movies. Insidious as well, right?
Mm-hmm. And he's a producer extraordinaire. Like, his name sells movies.
What was it? Lights Out that he did?
I don't.
Did he like produce that? I think
you mean the feature, not the original short film.
Yeah. Yeah. He was the producer of Lights Out. Yep. So, and, you know, Annabelle, anything he puts his name on in horror usually does really well. He did Fast and Furious 7. I didn't know he directed that, but you know, anyway, so we watched this and God, it's such a beautiful, grotesque wonder of low budget cinema and the execution, you know, because they had the proof of concept short film that it was based on. It's basically our wet dream that one of our ideas would blow up from that. But God, is it also flawed? what, 17 years later? You know, mm-hmm. I'm bad at math, but some years.
You nailed it.
It the acting is not great.
Dude, it's objectively bad often, especially with Carrie. I can never say his name. Carrie Elwes, the Princess Bride guy.
And I cannot believe that is him. Yeah. I didn't know that back then. Like, I don't know why I didn't put two and two together. It was such a shorter time span from the two movies. But I immediately was like, is that? And he's like, yeah, everybody knows that. It's so funny.
Yeah, idiot.
He does like the dramatic theater Princess Bride acting, but in this low budget horror film, it's so out of place. So you got the writer of the film acting alongside him, who clearly hasn't had much acting experience, but that's almost to his benefit. So it's almost like a realistic, what would a Joe Schmo in this situation look and act like? And then you cut to like this classically trained, you know, theater actor. And I don't know. It's just,
I've done it.
It's just Hark, so bizarre.
Doth thy man lay upon thy floor.
Ooh, lay your hands off mine wife. You know, and it's like, and
out,
even like,
damn ankle out.
Fie on you. What is that word? Anyway, anywho, and even like Jigsaw himself is like this classically trained. Anyway, I love the movie. The traps are the coolest part. And that's the franchise learned that very quickly and stuck to that for what, 9 movies.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it reminds me of Final Destination, which that movie made a huge splash. And we all loved watching like the creative ways that people would potentially die. That's the tension and neatness of the film franchise. And I imagine if I watched Final Destination 1 now, I would get the same results. Like it would be neat, but also really cringeworthy. Mm-hmm. In fact, I really want to do that. But that's what we did for that day. Later that evening, I watched a movie called Those Who Wish Me Dead. Have you guys seen this or heard about this at all?
No. It's on HBO, right?
Yeah. So it's in theaters, but it's also free to stream on HBO Max.
Oh, that's the one with Angelina Jolie.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's directed by Taylor Sheridan, who directed Hell or High Water, Wind River. Wrote Hell or High Water, Wind River, and wrote Sicario. So that's why I eventually was like, holy shit, I got to watch this. To listen to this cast, it stars Angelina Jolie, Nicholas Hoult, and John Bernthal. So I was like,
I love me some burn.
I gotta fucking watch this movie. So it's currently a 6.1 out of 10 user rating on IMDb and a 60 Metascore. This movie is fucking awesome. Go watch it for what it is. It's free to stream on HBO Max. It's about a teenager who witnesses a murder. And I don't want to tell you of whom, because that's a little bit of a spoiler. I don't even watch trailers, so I don't want to tell you of whom. And Angelina Jolie plays a smoke jumper. Do you know what that is?
Didn't know.
Like some of these like Western California, Montana type areas where they have these giant forest fires all the time. And excuse me, listeners, if I'm explaining a smoke jumper wrong, I only know about them because there's like a comedy kids movie with John Cena where he's a smoke jumper. And I watched that with my son because he was a huge John Cena fan. Anyway, so what these guys do is like these giant forest fires, they will literally jump out of like airplanes and helicopters and parachute in and like save people. So incredibly dangerous, harrowing job. So Angelina Jolie is a smoke jumper and she's in like a fire tower. And this kid wanders up to her, you know, running from these assassins. And she has to like take care of him and run through the woods and stuff. And John Bernthal's all fucking John Bernthal-y. It's awesome. I forgot to mention Aidan Gillen's in it.
Oh, nice.
And he plays one of the assassins.
Old Littlefinger.
It's fucking awesome. Watch this movie. I was so pleased. The tension's great. The CGI is a little rough at times, but like the giant fires are clearly like green screen fires. And that's always rough when you go to like a wide shot and you're like, nah, it's not really on fire. But some of the close up fire shit is awesome because it's probably really fire. Fire. The Cornholio reference.
Classic
90s humor. The tension's amazing. And I feel like I haven't seen Angelina Jolie in like a decade. At least that's what I feel like.
I was just about, when you said her name, I was going to say I haven't heard of her in a movie in a while.
She's still so awesome. Like her charisma is amazing. She's magnetic. I mean, I was obsessed with her when I was a kid. Do you know what I mean? Like Tomb Raider, you know, my mom's like, I didn't know you were such a Tomb Raider fan. You know what I mean? Oh, I am now.
I'll give you 2 reasons.
But she's such an amazing actor and she carries this fucking movie. It's wonderful to see her act alongside like Aidan Gillen and John Bernthal. So anyway, I can't speak highly enough about it. It's not just because it's really the only thing I watched. I really was glad that I delved into it. So go watch Those Who Wish Me Dead. It is available again on HBO Max. And that brings us to the end of our Crossing Stream segment and brings us to Check the Gate. Check the Gate is the segment wherein we, streaming things, bring you, the listeners, the hottest, steamiest, freshest takes and TV and film you can find literally anywhere else. As Rob Lowe from Parks and Recreation would say, literally anywhere else.
You've heard it here third.
Yeah. I got some cool stuff I just wanted to talk about. It's not really new, so I just lied completely about what the segment is. So Army of the Dead comes out on May 21st. That we know for fucking sure.
We think.
We're going to review that next week, I swear to God. Or we just won't be on air. Like if Monday morning you wake up.
Is it streamable?
Yes, on Netflix.
Okay.
It's actually in theaters right now, but Andy suggested we go see that instead the other day. And I said, no, we need to watch it hot and fresh right before we record like we always do. So it will be on Netflix. I promise you. I did not get this wrong. So that's going to be awesome. But did you guys probably remember that originally Chris D'Elia was supposed to make his feature film debut? The comedian Chris D'Elia.
Was supposed to be in this?
Yes.
Maybe
you didn't know this.
I did not. Did they give him the Christopher Plummer treatment?
Yes. So Chris D'Elia, everyone probably knows, is accused of some very serious things about, sexual misconduct with minors. And he lost like all of his, book deals and contracts and live shows and all that stuff and disappeared completely for a good while. He's like making a resurgence on certain social media platforms. But anyway, I'm not here to talk about that. I think what's interesting is that when that happened, they had already filmed all of his parts for Army of the Dead. And poor Zack Snyder had been through enough. He's like, God damn it. So he replaced Chris D'Elia with comedian Tig Notaro. Are you familiar with Tig Notaro?
Yes, I am not.
Well, she's hilarious. She has some wonderful stand-up I recommend you check out. And so what they did was just reshoot all of his scenes with Tig and like replace him with her. And so I would assume some of the actors are in fact interacting with Chris D'Elia, but we're never going to be able to tell. And apparently it was really well done. It's like landmark deletion of a person cinema because it's incredibly well done. And also Tig Notaro looks absolutely fucking amazing. Like, Sarah Connor-esque cool and certain shots that I've seen of her. So I'm very excited to see that. I just thought it was interesting to bring up from the filmmaking perspective of, how do we just, the movie's done, it's in the fucking can, and we have to remove this whole person from many, many scenes.
That's 100% what happened to Kevin Spacey and All the Money in the World, I think it's called. They just reshot his scenes with Christopher Plummer.
Right.
That's what I meant when I said the Christopher.
Yeah, no, I remember that. Yeah, but I think this was on a little bigger scale, I think.
For sure, yeah. This is an action movie.
But yeah, I mean, it's just really neat. But apparently, it's getting really good advance reviews.
Dies, like 10 minutes in. Like,
yeah. Okay. Rewrote that completely. And so that's May 21st. So that would be, I think, 23rd, 24th. You'll be hearing us review Army of the Dead. So then the following weekend, it's going to be an action-packed fucking month. It was supposed to start with Spiral, but whatever. Cruella debuts on May 28th, the movie with Emma Stone, where we get the origin story, Joker-esque version of Cruella de Vil, which is getting great reviews. And that same day, OMG, A Quiet Place 2 comes out.
Oh, shit.
So
I'm excited.
I think Cruella will probably be on Disney Plus. Quiet Place 2, I'm not quite sure if that's going to be streamable.
I'm going to be in theaters.
So we need to go see that in theaters. Absolutely love the first installment. So we can talk about both of those, and that'll debut on May 31st or June 1st, whatever that is. And then on June 11th, I'm so fucking ready for this. We get Green Knight.
Yes.
Finally.
Yes. The new trailer came out this week for Green Knight.
That's why I put it in Check the Gate. But I just want to remind everybody that that's coming down the pipeline shortly after Quiet Place 2. Did you guys watch the second trailer?
I did.
I did not.
I didn't.
On purpose, but I heard it was awesome.
It was one of those things where I was at work and I just hopped on Reddit while I was waiting for something to export. And that was one of the top things. This new trailer for Green Knight. I was like, yes, please, more. Because that movie, the original trailer for that came out forever ago. And obviously the pandemic stopped so much of, everything coming out. And I'm so happy that that's finally coming out because that looks so
part of what unique. I love so much about Green Knight and why I didn't watch it is because I saw the first trailer when we were watching probably a ghost story or something at the Esquire.
It's been that long.
I think so. I mean, it's been a really long time. It's one of those, A24 films, A24 films. And so what I love about the way A24 does their trailers is I have no fucking idea what Green Knight is about, like, at all. I just, Dev Patel, it doesn't make any sense, like, time period wise. And then, you know what I mean? And then, like, Scary Shot, like, I think it's a horror, maybe not. I don't know. That's what I love about it. It's like, God, I gotta know what that is. And I don't want to watch another trailer and, like, start piecing shit together. Mm-hmm. But they're really good at making trailers, and it's probably still pretty obscure, I would imagine. Am I wrong?
It's much more pointed.
You know what it's about then.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't want to watch it.
We knew what the source material was anyway, so we kind of knew.
I mean, ish, but it's like so many things you could do with that, especially with your A24. It's sure. Like, oh my God.
Well, I won't tell you. So
it ends up being a mockumentary about, you know, like, for all I know.
There's a lot of office like scenes where Dev Patel's like, yeah, so I'm going to go find this Green Knight.
Have you heard about this guy?
Have you heard about this guy? He's a real dog of a bloke.
He's a scoundrel, if you will.
Yeah.
Anywho, so that's coming out June 11th. And then have you guys heard all this nonsense about the cast of Knives Out 2?
Yes.
Yes. And actually, this is a great time, you guys, to announce that all of us at Streaming Things are also joining the cast of Knives Out 2.
We were going to save it for later, but that's the big treat.
But instead of Spiral, this is the new surprise.
So they've added Edward Norton, Dave Bautista.
Give me what I want.
Give me what I
want. Give me what I want.
Christopher Plummer. No?
He's dead.
Sorry. He's I just said sorry.
He's deader than Disco.
What a stupid response to that. Just tell him what I know. It's not Janelle Monáe, but she is going to be in Knives Out 2. Steve, lay it on him. I know what's coming.
I actually have no idea what you're trying to get me to throw. It's what you're throwing to me.
Oh, really? I thought you already knew and you were super excited about it.
I'm sure I do, but I don't know exactly what you're talking about.
You said, give me what I want.
Give me what I want.
Daniel Craig.
Was it Catherine Hahn?
Yeah.
Is that what you're hinting at?
Yeah, I thought that's what he was like leading me toward.
No, give me what I want is a Dave Bautista thing.
Oh, is it like from wrestling?
Yeah, there's a famous promo where he just is yelling, give me what I want. Give me what I want.
My lack of WWE knowledge ruined the podcast because I'm like, he's fishing for Catherine Hahn and I'm going to tease him.
I mean,
I'm going to keep saying other names, even dead people. And
if you had said like, now, Steve, who was it all along? I would have said it was Agatha all along.
Ah, so, let's just cut that in later.
Yeah. It was Agatha.
The power of editing. Yeah, so Catherine Hahn was announced, and there's a whole bunch of jokes on Twitter because everybody, these huge charismatic names kept being added to the cast list. And then the CDC came out with that you don't have to wear masks anymore if you've been vaccinated thing. And I saw a bunch of people tweeting like, CDC just announced that Boba has been added to the cast of Knives Out 2. And it had me laughing all day. I was very happy about it. We all here thought Knives Out was
best movie of the year.
Yeah. Since Sliced Bread. Mm-hmm. I think we can all agree Sliced Bread is slightly better. Mm-hmm. But then you had to take the knives out to slice it. So I guess related.
If we ever do like an episode, which I assume we will when Knives Out 2 comes out, when it comes out, we all should do the review entirely in the Daniel Craig Southern accent.
I think only you can pull that off, Steve. How is your Foghorn Leghorn? Is it strong?
No, I'll say it is.
Yeah, it's decent. It's not as good as some of your
others. We're going to watch Knives Out too.
It's getting better. You just got to warm up.
You guys don't want to hear me try it.
No, we don't.
Well, you say that, but really it's the opposite.
Andy's, all his accents come out like vaguely Russian.
Vaguely Russian or South Park character.
Andy, show us your Knives Out. Your Foghorn Leghorn. Hello. I am a Foghorn Leghorn. I like potato and vodka.
I am real American detective.
I solve many crime. And that's just getting increasingly Borat. And then I go home to my wife.
Mi esposa.
My final bit of news. Have you guys heard about the film Kate, a Netflix thriller starring one of my most favoritest people of all time, Ms. Mary Elizabeth Winstead? It's an American action thriller directed by Cedric Nicholas Troyan and written by Umair Alim. And it also stars Woody Harrelson. I don't know much about it other than that. You know, I'm spoiler averse, but it's produced by David Leitch. Anyway, I think it's going to be phenomenal. I think it's coming out sometime in the fall, so we got a while to wait, but it just, I saw some stills from the film. I thought that Mary Elizabeth Winstead in Birds of Prey was like a hint at some.
Oh, she was the awkward archer.
Yeah, or she kept, you know, killing people in awkward ways. But I thought that there was a hint of like action thriller stardom in that, in her, that I had never considered really. And I was really excited to see more of that. And so now I feel like, I hope we get some sort of Charlize Theron Atomic Blonde Renaissance version of her that I'm very excited to see. So that'll be Kate on Netflix.
I've always been a fan of Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Me too. Absolutely. Fargo season, was it season two? Season three. I think it was, she was the best part of season three is what I would say. Everything she pops up in, I'm like, ooh, what a twist.
Ooh, Ramona Flowers.
Ramona Flowers.
It's you.
You sounded like Owen Wilson for a second.
Oh, wow. It's Ramona Flowers.
Oh, wow. I love that movie.
I love that movie.
Okay.
You know what? I'm going to go see it tonight.
Wow.
I'm going to call my friend Vince Vaughn.
Now do a Vince Vaughn.
Okay, fuck face. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Just a guy.
Ah, libertarianism.
It's just a guy.
You just got to talk really fast, basically, to sound like Vince Vaughn.
So that brings our Check the Gate segment to a close. And now on to our main event, our favorite and least favorite movie theater memories.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Once upon a time, we went to movie theaters, guys.
Yeah. Back in the before times, the long, long ago, we would line, we would literally line up to go into a room where we would sit packed in with hundreds of strangers to have a shared experience.
Sneezing
on a silver screen.
And breathing and farting and sharing popcorn and just digging hands around in bags and then passing them forth and with and hither
every
and yon.
Every now and then there'd be an adjacent blowy or handy... Depending on the movie you're in.
Does it depend upon the movie? I guess there's some where it's just outright rude.
I did one time okay. So there was a Matt Damon film.
Like, hey, you sir.
What are you doing?
You can't give blowies during How to Train Your Dragon.
This is The Color Purple. What are you doing?
I know his name is Toothless, but come on.
Nice. No teeth. Nox, bro. Anyway, tell your Matt Damon story.
Oh, well, there was a Matt Damon. I'm trying to look it up now because I don't remember the name of the movie, but it was
Matt Damon.
It came out, I think, around 2011. It was very much an old person, Matt.
Tell
Damon
me more. Movie. My 2011 film knowledge is unsurpassed.
I honestly couldn't. It was, I think, The End of the World was at stake.
Uh-huh.
It was a movie I never saw.
Elysium?
No, it was.
Damn it.
It was literally Mr. Ripley.
No, it was like an old person movie.
What does that mean, Steve?
Like, literally the only people who were watching it were old people. I don't know what else to tell you.
Oh, like George Clooney in The Ides of March?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah. Actually,
I love that movie.
No, you don't. Fucking liar.
I don't. You're right.
The disdain with which you said that.
Sometimes I got to call him on his bullshit.
Hereafter. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. It was Hereafter. I was never going to guess that.
Did you see that movie?
No, I literally didn't know it existed.
Okay, so it was a movie called Hereafter.
I'm not old.
So, but literally, this is when I worked at the movie theater. There was a bunch of old people watching the movie. There's maybe like the first three rows were covered. And an usher called me and they're like, Steve, there's somebody doing stuff up in this lobby or in this auditorium. And I look out, I don't see anybody. I'm like, there's a bunch of old people. What are you talking about? And they're like, yeah, cause they're up there doing stuff. And I was like, oh, I understand. I pick up what you're putting down. So I walk up the stairs, you know, I'm prepping my stuff.
Is this the one that you told before with the craziness?
I don't know if I've told it on air, but I think I've told you guys off air. But I'm slowly walking up. I'm stealing myself to see, like, oh, what am I going to walk? What am I walking into? What are these two doing up here? What gross sexual act am I going to catch people in the middle of? And I get up there, and it's a young couple. They're probably teenagers. Thankfully, they're just making out. But the positioning is really funny where the guy, if you can picture it, the guy is slumped in the chair. So his shoulders are like literally on the butt of the chair. So his back and neck are like vertical. And then his legs are, you know, at a 90 degree angle pointed down. The girl is straddled on top of him, but like in a really weird way. And so I walk up to them and I'm standing next to them, but they're so involved in the moment. You know, they're young and in love and they're making out in front of hereafter, you know, the moment's right. So they don't even see me there. So then I sit down next to them.
Oh no. Just watch.
And they cause I'm trying to like spook them. Cause I don't want to like, hey, quit making out. Like while the movie's playing.
So you straddled him. Excuse me.
Well, I sat
got
down
a human centipede
literally
situation going on.
Literally sat down next to them thinking they would like, you know, catch
oh my
on
God.
That I'm there. Like, oh God.
Sure.
But they didn't. So, and at this point I'm like, what the fuck? Do I have to like poke them? Like, what am I going to do? So finally I was just like, fuck it. I'm just going to say something. I go, hey, what are you guys doing?
Those are the words that came out of your mouth.
I just said, hey, what are you guys doing? And of course they like, and then like the girl practically falls off him because I scared the shit out of him. And they're like, oh, nothing. And I'm like, you guys should stop or I have to kick you out. And then I got up and left and figured like that'll be it. But you know, they left shortly after because I think they were just embarrassed that they got caught by a weird man that snuck up on them in the darkness and said, hey, what are you guys doing?
And the Clint Eastwood movie, The World Forgot.
Yeah, you were being what I think in the early aughts was referred to as a cock blocker.
Yeah.
For sure.
A buddy of mine who worked at the time said, dude, that was the wrong thing to say. You should have said, hey, you guys better stop or I'm going to join in. Which, what could have been?
Right. Oh, the memories we could have had. Do you think they went up to the kiosk and were like, we would like tickets to the least attended film this evening?
Seriously, there was like 20 people in that movie.
Did someone complain?
Which is a lot.
Or did another usher like see them and wasn't brazen enough to do anything about it?
I think that was the situation. At least to my knowledge, nobody complained.
So they called you for the heavy lifting. Steve?
Yeah. I mean, I was the manager at the time. So like whenever, and I always told people that I worked with, like, if you have to do something you're uncomfortable with, come get me. I'll do it. Cause you don't get paid enough to do that shit. I do.
Yeah. So Andy, I guess, tell me this, what, I'll just DJ this whole affair.
Okay.
Andy, what is your fondest memory in a movie theater that you can think of?
My fondest memory in a movie theater. I feel like I have fond memories of movie going experiences for different reasons. So the one I'm going to talk about specifically is because of the unexpected end result of what I ultimately ended up watching. It was an experience with you. We, for a minute there,
similar to Steve's story
going around. It's very similar. So I'm in
so the usher came up
chair.
To us, right?
I'm leaned way down in the chair.
I was really uncomfortable and Chris was on top of me.
It was extremely uncomfortable, man. The situation that did happen. So me and Chris were checking out a bunch of different movie theaters. We went up to this one up in Ohio somewhere and we went to go see the movie Widows. And so we go to this movie theater we've never been to before and we get in there and there's people that are in our seats. It's one of those assigned seating situation things where it's like you pick your seats and you go in there. We go in there. There's people sitting in our seats. We're like, oh, fuck. And like Chris hesitated when he went to sit down and it's like, but he didn't say anything out loud. Like he stopped in front of the people. Looked at him for a second and then moved past him and sat down. And I'm like, okay, that was weird. And like, we had our popcorn and stuff. And eventually he leaned over. He's like, those were our seats. I was like, oh, okay, no, that's fine. No big deal. And so we're sitting there. We're early. The trailers start playing. And then eventually this older couple comes up and they said, hey, you're actually in our seats. Cause we were, cause the other couple was in our seats. And we're like, oh, okay, no big deal. And so, at this point, it's super awkward. We've waited way too long to say anything to the couple next to us.
Yeah, that's dumb.
Yeah.
like 20 minutes later, hey guys, those are actually our seats. So then we move to yet another section that is not ours.
Oh God.
And then the movie starts. We would see Widow.
We thought we're in the clear.
Wait, right. You could have said something. The movie hadn't started yet.
Right. But we had been there long enough.
The No,
I'm saying social contract wise, like I've already noticed, bitched out and sat elsewhere. Right.
And then we were moved somewhere else because someone else came. So anyway, the movie starts. Then another couple comes up and says, guys, you're actually in our seats.
And no, he's not. I mean, you're telling it very accurately, but you can't paint the picture of the terrible anxiety and how it occurs. Sure. Because I'm already nervous. So in seat number one, where I've already realized someone's in our seats and I've decided that that man is going to give me a talking to I don't appreciate and won't go well if I say anything, I just get that vibe.
Sure.
So I sit elsewhere, like not worth it, whatever. But there's always that anxiety knowing someone's probably sitting here. This movie just came out. Oh no. Fuck it, right? And so, okay, that anxiety is heightened 20-fold when they tell us to actually move. And everyone kind of turns around like, what an asshole.
Right, you're sitting in someone else's seat.
Did you even pay for this movie? You're a real piece of shit, right? So then we scoot forward into seats that are undesirably close to the giant screen. Anyone who goes to a theater professionally like we do knows these are not seats you choose by choice.
Like right. Second row all the way to the right, like didn't want to be
there. Terrible seats. But we sit down like, okay. But now my anxiety's through the roof. Like if this happens again, I am going to lose my shit most likely. And then you see people kind of creep up, look kind of in your direction, glance down at their tickets. Like maybe they've gotten something. And you all know that feeling, right? Yeah. Maybe they got like when you steal seats at like a baseball game and you think you've been busted. Did we get this wrong? Look at their tickets, look back up. Look at each other, whisper a little bit, look around for an usher. And then, okay, now I'm just like, trying to watch the movie, but like definitely not paying attention. Okay, now go on.
So anyway, they were their seats. And so
plot twist.
They asked for their seats. And I can't remember what the fuck you said, but it made no sense. The words that came out of his mouth made no sense. It was something like, I'm just fucking trying.
The words so for listeners that don't know, I'm mentally unwell, basically, right? And so, like, I think it's important to the story. It makes it sure. Funnier. Like, it's funnier for you because you were laughing the entire time and I was legitimately suicidal. You know what I mean? Like, that's the difference between our personalities. And so, if I say anything to someone, I'm liable to say things that are like insane. Like, so Andy knows this about me. Mm-hmm. Like, so if a wait staff at a restaurant brings me the entirely wrong plate, I'll just eat it and I'll be happy and I'll give a huge tip because I've been there and it's hard and who cares, right? But if something like that does anger me, I will just say, like, I'll get red in the face and like flip my chair over. And like, that's how I can't explain it accurately. But so I'm like, DEFCON 9, like, and Andy's like, oh no. So I stand up and yeah, I probably said like, well, fuck it. You know, if anyone else, no one else has rules, you know, like I just, and they're probably like, what?
So anyway, Chris wants to storm out of the theater at this point. At no point did it ever, was it ever a question like, okay, now we should go talk to the guys that are in our seats.
No, no. Never occurred like to me. That I told Andy, let's go home. Like,
right. And not like get a refund. Like, let's just leave. And I said like, no, fuck that. Let's see what else is playing. You know what else was playing, Steve? Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, there you go.
We had never seen it. It was out at the same time.
Didn't know anything about it. We're like, well, let's go fucking watch that. That just started 10 minutes
Spider-Man.
Ago.
Right.
Now, to be fair, it was also very uncomfortable seating because this was apparently a very popular theater. It was sold out as well. We went and sat in the handicap seats and I felt like a piece of shit doing that. And so like the first like 20 minutes
you're fine.
Watching that movie, I'm sort of like hunched up, like looking around like,
oh, because we didn't pay for tickets for it. Right. We just
walked
right in there.
Yeah. Oh, okay. We had Widow's tickets.
But I was going to say, like, he was taken.
We're admitting breaking the law on air right now, Andy.
Dude, the theater movie law. Get you.
But so that's one of my fondest movie going memories, because like I eventually saw Widows and it was okay, but Spider-Man in the Spider-Verse is a fucking masterpiece. And that was like, there's this hysterical situation that completely fell apart as just a comedy of errors, because from the beginning, we just didn't say, hey, those are our seats. And it was all terrible. But then we got to watch the best animated movie ever made. And it was a great experience, because
I completely forgot about that. Yeah, that's a beautiful story, because I have huge anxiety issues, and to be real clear and paint an accurate picture, I mean, I was like near tears. Let's go home. I don't want my fucking money back. And I was a complete drama queen. Like, that's how I get. I'm like, I never want to fucking watch a movie ever again, Andy. Let's go. You know, like, and then he was like, no, man. Like, you know, and so we ended up seeing Into the Spider-Verse, and it was wonderful.
It's a great movie.
So anyway, that's how that happened. Good story, Andy. I forgot completely about that.
Thanks, man.
I have a lot of fond memories about movie theaters. I've spent most of my life in them, and worked at one for a while, just like Steve. And Andy actually worked at one for many years.
I did.
I often forget about that. But I was thinking earlier about when we were kids, and I don't think this will ever be somewhat Star Wars. So what I'm getting at is, there was a time in my life when that was the place to be. There was a movie theater called The Great Escape and Wilder, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And so after school, not only would we go see movies there, but 15, 20, 25 of us would hang out there. There was an arcade as well.
Is The Great Escape closed?
It is now.
It's called The Regal.
Well, and now Regal's dead.
Regal bought it.
Oh,
and Regal's dead?
Regal went out of business during COVID, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, that's depressing.
I had no idea.
I'm 90% sure. Yeah, Regal's gone. But yeah, we would all go, and there was an arcade as well, and we would hang out and play. Do you remember Dance Dance Revolution, Steve?
Do I?
Then we would play Hacky Sack and Dance Dance Revolution and all these arcade games. And, you know, I was an awkward teenager. I had like Kurt Cobain t-shirts, and Andy was like that as well. We both had really long hair, and there was like girls that we had huge crushes on, and they would always meet us there and be aloof. And I like experienced an entire range of adolescence and emotions there. Like, I'd cry in the corner because the girl didn't talk to me, and then we would laugh and giggle and kick hacky sacks and
go play Time Crisis.
Yeah. And ultimately go see at least one, maybe two movies. And but there was an entire rows, you know, bought out by us, and we would experience these things together. And specifically, I remember seeing X2. Do you remember this, Andy?
I don't remember the specific. I know I saw that. I don't remember that experience.
At this time in our lives, I think Andy and I both did the same thing, but we would always keep the stubs of our movies.
Oh, I did that too.
Yeah. And I would tape them onto my wall next to my bed at like posters. And so I had like dozens and dozens and dozens of these stubs. Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2 was one of them. But I remember X2 specifically because that opening set piece with Nightcrawler.
Oh yeah.
Where he's
that was so badass.
Disappearing in and out, and like, you know, when he's like Winter Soldiered trying to kill the president or whatever. Mm. And it was just so fucking amazing, and all of us were like cheering and ranting. We'd never seen, there were no comic book movies like that at the time. Do you know what I mean? So we were like, holy shit, you know, they've done it. This is crazy. And I had a huge crush on this girl named Chrissy. So it was Chris and Chrissy, right? And for many years. And she was sitting like 6 or 7 seats down. And so during the trailer, we were very close friends, but I was absolutely in love with her. And I was completely like, quote unquote, friend zoned, which you can't use that term anymore. But that's what it felt like at the time. And I'm throwing all these raisinettes and like popcorn at her. And because I, you know, I have a crush on her, right? And she would giggle and like throw something back, right? And so, and I was kind of like a little asshole teenager, like many are, but like to an nth degree. And so what made it funny, why I'm telling this story, is I don't know if you remember this, Andy. I throw shit at her like 6-7 times. And finally, she throws something back at me. And right then, I don't, Steve, you'll relate because this is actually kind of insane working in a theater for so long. Or maybe you'll be like, I totally get it. This usher comes out of nowhere and screams, fucking stop or you'll have to fucking get out. Like, right as she did it. And he's yelling right at her, and she did nothing wrong. Like, I was tormenting her for 20 minutes, and she like just gets blood red and she's like, what? And we all die laughing because we know what's been transpiring. And I don't know why. I guess that was like the day where he was like, just no more. Watch the movie. But that's, I was thinking about that on the drive here and started chuckling like, that's awesome.
There was an usher. I know him very well. I'm not going to say his name to protect his identity. But there's, you remember the movie We Are Marshall?
Yeah. Go on.
The movie. So if you don't know, the movie's about a football team that basically dies in an airplane. Was it, an airplane crash, right?
And I think
then,
so.
And then the movie's about like the team after.
Remember the Titans is the superior version.
Right.
Right.
Well, that movie was out. It was very popular. And the ushers went in to clean it because it had let out. And one of the ushers, not realizing that there were still people in the auditorium watching the credits, just starts going, "We are corpses."
Oh, no.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, I totally get usher sometimes yell shit. Actually, I don't know if it was the same at the theater you guys worked at, but at our theater, it was kind of common. It was like the joke was that the ushers were like the dumb people.
Like I was an usher, so that makes perfect sense.
I mean, it's not true at all because everyone's a dumb teenager that works in movie theater, but like just because of the way that the ecosystem was, I was like, oh, let so-and-so be an usher. He's an idiot. He can do it.
100%, that yeah, 100%. That's all I was ever allowed to do. I'm seeing my whole experience in the theater in a different light.
Dude, I was box office. I was the top of the cream. You know what I'm saying?
But yeah, box office at all the theaters I worked at were either like really, really good employees or like the old, nice, sweet ladies. Right? Like the really sweet old ladies would work at box office.
All the sweet old people were always the ticket takers.
Ticket takers, as yeah. box office employee, did you work box office ever, Steve?
I worked everything.
See, I've told this story before. My tenure was at the height of my addiction. The last actual job I held was at the AMC movie theater. So I was a terrible employee. I would go downstairs to the bar and take shots and then come back up and they'd be like, "Where are you doing?" I'm like, "Fucking smoking. Why are you on my ass all the time?" You know, so I was that guy. If they even knew I was gone, because as an usher, they never really know where you're at.
I must it's awesome. Smell your breath.
Right. I'm such a good employee. But anyway, so did you actually ever card people for rated R movies or what's that like? Are you responsible for that? It's not like selling liquor where you can be punished, right? So
like,
because I felt as a teenager that you were just being a dick if you were trying to say I couldn't see Terminator 2 or whatever, right?
It was less of a let me see an ID and more of like a no. You know what I mean? Like you get like a teenager, like a 12-year-old that's very obviously not 17. Like, I want a ticket to see Saul 4. It's like, no.
Right.
Me personally, I carded everybody. Just because I had the situation, I was a strong proponent of like, I got to card everybody or nobody.
Yeah.
And I use it to my advantage. Cause obviously if like an older person comes in and you card them, even though that's stupid to say, I would usually use it to my advantage. Like, well, sir, you look pretty good for your age. And usually that worked. But like if teenagers got in there, I wouldn't do shit about it unless they were causing a problem.
That's what we would always do, is buy PG-13 tickets and then just obviously walk into the other theater.
Right. I mean, that was never, as a manager, I never enforced box office people to do that. I was never up there like, make sure you card everybody. That was right. Just something I did personally.
Yeah.
Because I honestly didn't care unless they were causing a problem. Then I cared. Then I was like, what are you doing in here?
I never wanted to be that guy. I think like the worst that I would do is say something like, do you have a parent or guardian with you? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But even then, I don't think that I turned away very many people. And I worked there for a couple of years. Like I probably turned away maybe half a dozen, you know, mm-hmm. like just an outright, like absolutely not. I think I even at one point like said, dude, just buy a ticket to something else and go.
Yeah. He's like dork.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I just always felt like, I think it had happened to me a couple of times and I just felt like, come on, man. Like you're like 17 and a half making $5.15 an hour and I'm 15.
Well, there is an aspect, certain employees, that was their one way they could take out their frustrations of working at the theater on the customer. Cause like you can't, like if a customer's being an asshole to you, it's not appropriate to be like an asshole back. But if there was like a kid that shouldn't be in a movie theater, you can like direct all your ire on that person, even if they're like an innocent bystander. And I know some people who worked at the theaters were like that. They were like, ooh, it's a game. Let's find out how many teens we can kick out of a theater today. Even if they weren't even causing a problem. It was just,
I had a manager like
that was their outlet.
Like mall cop syndrome kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like the one little bit of power they could exert over customers, so they took advantage of it.
Because that happened to me in when I was about 10 or so, I want to say 10 or 11, and it was actually at Movie Warehouse, which was like a local Blockbuster-esque video store. So it wasn't in a movie theater, but I would just wander the store. My mom was pretty close with some of the employees there, and I would spend hours and hours wandering around looking at video games and then rent a couple. And my mom just watched like what was ever on TV, mostly like daytime TV shows and stuff. She wasn't big with film at all. So she, by and large, didn't know anything that I was watching and didn't really care. Like, I mean, I'm talking American History X. Like, those were my early like viewing experiences because they didn't really know. And I did really well in school. And so I rent, I'll never forget it. It was Jeffrey Rush. And it was called Quill. Did you ever see this movie?
I don't think I have. I love Jeffrey Rush.
Quills was about Marquis de Sade.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
And so I look at the back of this box, right? And I'm seeing some pretty lascivious things, right?
Okay.
Some pretty, I don't know who Marquis de Sade is at 10 years old, but I see.
You're about to find out.
Things. Yeah, I'm about to find out, right? So, I get like Conan and Time Cop and Quills as I do. And I go up to the.
That's the trio of movies.
And I give them to my mom and she starts checking them out. And the guy's name is Brad. Fucking Brad. And I felt like he betrayed me because he gave me my first guitar. And he showed me all kinds of cool movies. He told me about Clerks. And I'm like, okay, this guy's got my back.
Oh, so you knew Brad.
Yeah. I mean, I always at this video store. I was like, all I did. I never watched a sport ball in my life, but I love movies my whole life. And he looks at my mom and he's like, I really don't think he should watch this movie. There's a lot of very graphic sex in it. And she's like, oh, what are you trying to do? Go put this back. And I just looked at him with such loathing and just all the respect drained out forever.
Ain't you Brad?
Ain't you Brad? Right. Like, you cock blocker. What are you, Steve? What is this?
I was going to get down and watch Quills.
So mad.
But he let you get Time Cop and...
Yeah, I mean... And I guess that's what I was, did you guys, so Steve, you said you carded everybody, but what did you really think about? Like, cause you probably knew what was in the movie. Was sex more of a discerning quality for you, or was it extreme violence, or just didn't matter the fact that it was rated R for whatever reason it was rated R?
It didn't matter.
So like Eyes Wide Shut, you weren't like extra policing.
No, what I would do is if there was like a parent and a child that was coming in and the child was really little and they were going to see something, I would say something like, now there is a ton of stuff. Is that okay with you? Like, it's your choice. As long as you're there with them, I don't care. I just want to make sure you know.
I don't want you to be shocked, right?
Yeah. And most of the time they would be like, yeah, but every now and then there'd be one parent's like, oh, really? What is it?
What?
Well, let's go watch Sky High.
Is it the Kurt Russell superhero
movie? Yeah.
That's another.
I don't know why that's the movie that popped in my head.
I appreciated it.
That's another one of my favorite movie going experiences was one time back when the Florence Theater was still there. We went as a family, like my mom, my dad, and all my siblings and me went to the movies and we saw.
Are you talking about like the Erlanger one, like Danbury or something?
No. So the it's torn down now, but not the Danbury, but the one that was like on 75 when you're heading. So we went and saw, coming off of the tales of like Dumb and Dumber and The Mask and stuff, Jim Carrey's new movie.
No,
Me, Myself, and Irene.
Oh wow, yeah.
I went and saw that with my fucking parents, dude.
Oof.
That movie is so crass, and there's so much like dick humor, and like it was.
There's like an extended dildo joke in that, right?
My parents
were he's like mortified, he's
washing his butthole in the sink.
Did you sit there and watch
the whole thing?
Oh yeah, we sat.
Was it less funny because they were there?
No, dude. Honestly, no. So I was very young, so a lot of it was over my head humor. You know what I mean? But like, I enjoyed it because
dad was
like
slapping his knee, like, oh yeah,
right,
dildos in his ass.
My parents are extremely old fashioned, so that like it was mortifying for them, and us kids were having a great time because it's Jim Carrey saying fuck. You know what I mean? Like, but. It just a great experience because afterward, like my dad was like apologizing to us and stuff. Like, I'm really sorry. I didn't know that that was what we were going to see.
I had a similar experience. My mom and stepdad, they chose the movie. And it was the Eddie Murphy.
Darkness.
The Eddie Murphy Nutty Professor movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I have not seen this movie since, but we went and saw the movie. I don't remember anything about it, but something about it offended my parents so much that we left early and they were apologizing.
It was the farting.
We're so sorry you had to see that. So I haven't gone back to like revisit it. So I don't I can't even tell you what it was that was so offensive to them that they were like, oh my God, Eddie Murphy's playing several characters. This is, how dare he?
Other actors need work. Come on, Steve.
Is that the one that has the Hercules?
Yeah. I had the same experience with Big Mama's House. I just made that up. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, wow.
I'm sorry.
I'm sensing a theme with these Midwestern parents. Midwestern white parents.
Black comedians in fat suits.
Martin.
Black comedians doing drag. No, sir. Not in front of my child.
I've got all these memories coming up now. Because when I was a little kid, some of the listeners, the Gen Z listeners might be like, what? But when I was a kid, to see what was playing at the theater, my dad actually had he bought a newspaper for like a quarter every day. And there was a section of the newspaper where you would look and see what was playing in theaters and what the showtimes were. Mm-hmm. And they had like little movie poster, black and white pictures. And that's kind of how and like little plot descriptions. And that's how we discuss things. Like there was no podcasts or anything like that where I knew what was coming out months from now.
To check out the trailers.
Yeah. No internet even. It was literally just, you open the newspaper and you don't even know what the fuck that is. Siskel and
Ebert was on late at night. So you might not have even gotten to see it that Friday.
Right. And I grew up very poor. So like these moments were very few and far between, like where my dad could spare the money to go spend like, you know, like, for two people, even it's like $30. Even back then, you know, all the popcorn and stuff was very expensive. And so if he had just gotten paid from like a building a wall or helping build a house or whatever, and we had some money and we'd get La Rosa's pizza and, you know, he would say Sunday morning or something, he'd say, hey, do you want to go see a movie? And I'd be like, fucking really? You know, hell yeah. You know,
I love how little you was like, fucking really?
Yeah, right, for sure. Cause I just watched American History X. but specifically, and it's gonna make me cry thinking about it. So I remember when the Fast and the Furious came out, and I didn't really get to spend that much time with my dad, specifically alone with him either, because he was always really stressed. And he's like, so we went and saw, you know, Paul Walker and Vin Diesel fucking racing. I almost said getting it on, which would have been a way different movie. I live my life a quarter mile at a time. Me too.
I can't quit you.
You want to race for pink slips? I want to race for something else.
It's a whole different meaning to All in the Family.
So we saw the original The Fast and the Furious. And, you know, my dad liked Limp Bizkit. So rolling. Yeah. We had a great... Put it in your... Yeah! We had a great fucking time. Did you guys see that movie in the theaters? Or were you... aware of that and at the time
I was aware of it. I never saw it. I hated
I know you've told how out. Much you hate those movies, but I don't think you were old enough to actually work there for the original.
No, but I worked there definitely for Tokyo Drift
and right, the worst of the franchise.
But no, every year those movies came out, there was a certain clientele that came out.
But what's interesting
and great to work with, like
the very first movie gave no indication that there would be a sequel, much less like a 9-film franchise that morphed into something completely different.
The first movie, they're like racing cars, but also they're trying to like steal batteries or something.
Yeah, they're criminals, and
like
he's
stealing
Paul Walker's
something very
a cop.
Small peanuts, and now they're like, we got to take down the satellite before it destroys Ukraine or whatever.
Right. And David Ayer directed it. Am I right?
Directed the original Fast and Furious.
I want to say he did.
No, I think so. Directed that.
I want to say yes.
Dude, I saw it. I love the original Fast and the Furious, but I completely fell off after the second one, and I never saw. I think I saw like Fast 5 or something, maybe. But other than the first two, I've seen one.
I've seen one Fast and the Furious to its completion, and that's
to completion.
And that was. And that was whichever one that Paul Walker had passed away while it came out. And that was his last one.
You just wanted to see what they did
seven?
With
more so
filmmaker's perspective.
More so my wife wanted to see what they did.
And you didn't even finish the first one?
No.
I stand by the first one as a good movie.
I've never seen
it. It could be the fond memories of it. So at the time, I was obsessed with Michelle Rodriguez.
Understandable.
She was in like a boxing movie. I don't remember the name of it. And I think Resident Evil was already out at that time, right? And she had a bit part in that. And I don't know. I was just smitten with her. I think that was the birth of Vin Diesel. So I can't imagine I was a fan of him or Paul Walker. Yeah, but anyway, I just
Saving Private Ryan specifically remember
sitting alone. Right. That's fair. He was in Band of Brothers too, wasn't he? Everybody was.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I just remember sitting next to my daddy. And that was before the Lord of the Rings stuff, I believe, or right around that same time. So anyway, really good fond memories of that. I mean, Steve, what is something that stands out to you with movie theaters? It's been a while since we heard from you and your memories.
You know, there's a bunch of like small memories. Like it's not like super big experiences, but I'm getting flashes of like really fun moments. For instance, when my family went and saw Elf, the Will Ferrell holiday movie. It was at Springdale Cinemas, and I think they oversold the auditorium because I remember watching all of Elf sitting on the stairs.
Huh.
So like we were just, it was, and I was sitting, I think it was just me and my mom, and I think my stepdad was there, but I remember sitting on the stairs with my mom and watching that movie, and that was nice. Revenge of the Sith came out. I remember me and a bunch of friends, Phil, John, who was on, you know, we called him a couple episodes back. We went to see Revenge of the Sith. It was a midnight release, and Phil's dad came, and Phil's dad is a huge nerd, and I love Phil's dad, Charles. He looks like Tom Hanks. And then my mom also went, and it was just fun, like, nerding out with Phil's dad, and then John, who's like a big, you know, shit stir, is like, hey, Steve, you wanna, I'm gonna get all these I'm gonna get all these nerds riled up. You wanna help me? And I'm like, sure. So like we were in the theater and the theater was packed, but we were just waiting for the movies to start for like 45 minutes. So he's like, let's all these Star Wars fans, let's go up in the front and give them the live long and prosper Star Trek hand signal and just piss all these nerds off. And we were like 17 or whatever it was at the time. So like, we're like, let's do it. It's going to be so funny. So we tell Phil to take a photo of the moment when it happens. Or no, I'm sorry. I got this reverse. John tells Phil and I to do that, and John's going to take the photo of it of us while it happens. So Phil and I go up in the front of the theater. We do the hand gesture. Don't get any reaction whatsoever because no one gives a shit. But the real funny thing is John's trying to take the photo, and he's
on like an actual camera, not a phone.
Yeah,
right?
This is like a legit old school camera, you know.
This will be clear to our listeners.
I see him because he's like on that like middle landing. He's taking the photo and he's trying to press the button.
He's clicking the wheel to get another shot, right?
Yeah. And I could tell he's pressing the photo, but nothing's happening. So he turns the photo around to look at it. And right when he does that, the flash goes off and he falls backwards onto the ground. So it was just a comedy of errors of these dumb teenage kids. Like, let's stir some shit in the Star Wars screening. And then like no one reacts. And then the guy who organized it falls over hoisted by his own petard.
And they do react to that.
Yeah. But a more recent one that has a more, you know, kind of going into bad stories. This theater experience was so bad, it has since circled back around and has become one of my favorite theater going experiences.
Oh shit.
So we went and saw Annihilation.
Oh, Natalie Portman movie?
Natalie Portman movie. We've talked about it a little bit on the show.
Yeah.
It's a really heavy sci-fi drama. And we go to the Marymount Theater, which is it's a local theater. It's very old school. It's in an area with a lot of old clientele. And it's a sold out house, which surprised me. It was in their biggest auditorium and it was sold out, which is very surprising for the theater. So we sit down and there are three groups of people around us. And these three groups of people are all distracting from the movie in completely different ways. Okay. The guys directly to my left are just the type of like, what's this sci-fi bullshit? I don't know. So literally everything, like Natalie Portman would say something on screen and dude would go,
That's what happened to me for Rise of Skywalker entirely.
I mean, it was constant. Like Oscar Isaac would look to his left. I didn't understand why he was making that noise. To my right were a group of older women who were very sweet, who clearly had no idea what they had gotten themselves into. They just saw Natalie Portman on the poster and were like, oh, I like her. She seems nice.
Black Swan was a little rough, but then, let's give her another shot.
And then the bear scene happens and they're like, I don't think we made a good decision. So they're just a cacophony of like, oh my, what's going on? What is this? Like, it's that person.
Right.
Directly behind me is the person who is 100% engaged with everything happening and does not have a silent mode. So Oscar Isaac looks to his left. Oh my God. So the entire show was, oh my God, what's happening? Oh, wow. None. Stop. And it was maddening. But by the end of the movie, I'm like, I love this movie so much more because of these insane three people. I want
this like on audio so I can recreate this in my home.
No one will believe that I got into a theater surrounded by the three stereotypes of bad movie going patrons.
When we went to Marymount for the first time, it was when La La Land came out. And we went to Newport on the Levee and started La La Land, and the audio was fucked up. It was like super quiet, and we were like, this is a fucking musical. This is a problem. We can't watch a musical that we can't hear.
That's how dedicated we are.
And so we were like, we need to get out of here. This movie's supposed to be amazing. So
because Andy was in charge, we got a refund. You know, if it had been up to me, I'd have watched it and been angry the whole time.
But so we got a refund, and then we looked up movie times and saw it was playing at Marymount. And we drove out there. It was the first time we'd ever been there. And it was basically us and a geriatric crowd. Just rocking out to La La Land, you know what I mean?
Hell yeah.
Another day of sun. These old people dancing. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I do have a couple real quick, like these aren't really stories. They're just moments that happen in a theater that are burned in my memory because they bring me so much joy. One of them was at Marymount. It was the Apollo 11 documentary that came out a couple years ago that was like all done up with found footage, like high def found footage from the Apollo missions. And it's produced by CNN. So the logo at the beginning of the movie starts up with CNN, and this old guy goes, fake news. And like everyone erupts in applause. And I was like, what the fuck is happening? Another example is the movie Serenity, the film based, you know, a continuation of the storied, you know, Joss Whedon TV series Firefly. The movie opens and it cuts to black. It shows the title of the movie Serenity, which, you know, the camera then pulls back and reveals that that's the painting of the name of the ship that it's on. So it pulls back to reveal the ship. But when it reveals the title Serenity, this guy just goes, Serenity. Completely silent auditorium. Serenity. Like,
wow.
Cracks me up. Last Skywalker hyperspace moment where she goes into hyperspace and destroys all the Imperial ships. And that's a dead ass quiet scene. Last Jedi. Thank you. No sound at all. It's beautiful imagery.
All of us thought that the theater broke, right?
Well, I assume some people did. Yeah. But like, it's completely quiet. And again, you just hear one guy go, nice. Fucking hilarious. And then I think I might have told this one before on the show, but it's, and correct me if I have, but it's the Up, when I saw Up for the first time.
I don't think so.
I don't remember.
So the Pixar's Up, the first 10 minutes is this beautiful, somber, sad
destruction, you know, of the soul.
It just destroys you. It's so emotional and sad. There were these teenagers that were sitting in the front of the auditorium. And before the movie started, they were being really loud and obnoxious and taking selfies with the flash on.
Right.
And, you know, they quieted down when the movie started, but they had already, you could tell they were on the nerves of everybody who was in that theater. And this is a 12 o'clock show, right? So there's parents. It had just opened up. There's a bunch of kids in the auditorium. So we get to the montage. The teenagers have been quiet for some time. It's really, really sad. It reveals the shot of his wife is dead. And then one of the girls in the front goes, are you kidding me? To which some dude in the back just goes, shut the fuck up. In a kid's film, it was maddeningly hilarious. And those are just Yeah, those are some of my favorite, like, quick little sound bites that, from being in a movie theater.
My favorite sound bite was Return of the King, midnight release, after that movie's third ending, because that movie the ending of that movie goes on forever. Like, it keeps fading to white and then fading back in. The third time it did that, some dude in the back went, "Oh, come on!" Because it's a super fucking long movie. At this point, it's almost 4 a.m, and, like, we're all, like, taking off school the next day to go watch Return of the King, and I'll never fucking forget that
I think
one.
I was there with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my brother took us.
Yep. That's awesome. That's one thing I was going to mention. I got a couple little tidbits before we wrap up. In general, I don't know if, like, the younger crowd probably maybe never even did this, but you used to have, if you wanted to see a true premiere, it was, you know, Thursday at midnight. Mm-hmm. They don't do that anymore. I mean, they do, but, like, you can see it at 7 on Thursday now, sometimes even earlier. And, like, I guess they were trying to fill more seats. Theaters were already dying, so they started adding earlier showings for the, but it used to be like this huge event. If you've been waiting on a movie for years and years, you know, you had to call off work or call off school and go see it at midnight with a group of friends.
Way earlier to get a good spot in lines.
Yeah.
Get a good
giant seat lines of people.
They
absolutely
didn't have assigned seating at the time.
Yep. You were done if you wanted a good seat, or even sometimes tickets at all. You know, it was like a big concert event. It was monumentous, and I miss that. Right now you can download the app on your phone, buy the ticket for 7 o'clock Thursday. It's not because back, like, Phantom of the Menace, when that came out, like, remember Chrissy's brother James dressed up in this, like, super complicated Darth Maul costume, and was, like, walking around the lobby of the Great Escape with, like, a fake lightsaber and shit. It looked really, really, he put a lot of effort into it. And
I don't remember his, I remember him in a robe. I don't remember having, like,
he had the full makeup on. Yeah, it was really impressive. James did a great job. Stuff like that. Like, everybody's dressed up in cosplay for a movie. You know what I mean? Like, people don't really do that anymore. It's like, why would you do that? But that was the thing back then.
I'm going to wear the sweater for Knives Out too.
100%. Good.
The Cagle knit sweater.
But one of the small memories I remember, because a lot of people complain about this, but it happens with Marvel movies a lot now, but, like, the thunderous applause and audience interaction.
Yeah.
I am a huge, like, phone off, be quiet, don't interrupt the art kind of guy. I love Alamo Drafthouse and their whole mentality. But at the same time, I love those, like, midnight premiere energy for certain kinds of movies. And so I remember it was Lord of the Rings Two Towers, Legolas at Helm's Deep, when he slides down the stairs on the shield, and shoots everybody with his arrows. I mean, people, he got a fucking standing O for that.
Yeah.
People putting pinkies in their mouths, whistling. And I just, the energy, it was so awesome. Like, we were all united in this one thing. It didn't matter creed or color or political stance. We all knew Legolas was the shit. And it felt good. Just wanted to bring that up.
I went to one of my favorite midnight premieres that I ever went to, because we all have the shared experience of going to a Lord of the Rings and to a Star Wars and being
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter. The one that always stands out to me for just being an audience being just completely on the same wavelength and making the movie that much better for it was I went by myself to the midnight release of Snakes on a Plane.
Nice. You were that guy. Nice.
Nice. That theater was sold out. Because it's fun to make fun of, but remember back then, the zeitgeist around that movie was like, they're making this movie. It sounds insane. It was a meme of a movie before memes are really that big of a thing.
Yeah. Right?
And so everyone who came to the midnight release was just on that level of, this movie's probably going to be terrible, and if it's anything better than that, we're going to riot. Literally, one guy showed up dressed up. He dressed up as a plane and then had, like, one of those giant snake boas that you get from, like, a carnival that are, like, hot pink in color.
Yeah.
Like, draped around, like, he was wearing it like a bow, and he was dressed up as a plane and dancing around.
A snake on a plane.
Yeah. And I've never been in a theater where, like, everyone was, like, yelling, like, don't go in there, there's a snake. And then a snake would come out and everybody would be like, yeah. It was a magical experience. Yeah.
That is awesome.
I miss those.
It's like Rocky Horror. Just
that's what I was about to say. Yeah. I've never done that.
I haven't either.
I want to go to the midnight show of Rocky Horror. They have one, or they had one every other week, every other Saturday at Esquire. Mm-hmm. And I never.
What's the opera that they do that with now?
Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Is that what you're talking about? They do that a lot sometimes.
No, it's like a horror opera.
I know what you're talking about. Little Shop of Horrors.
No, but they started doing that with The Room. The Room has a interactive all audience style screenings now.
Like the Brie Larson movie?
No.
That's Room. That would be a terrible idea. Like,
what the fuck? No. What's his name? The disaster artist guy? I'm blanking.
Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah. They do... Rocky Horror like screenings of that now, where there's like interactive audience thing where, like, I guess there's something
tearing me apart, Lisa.
There's something with spoons where, like, if spoons show up, everyone goes spoons and they start throwing spoons at the screen. Yeah,
people are awesome. Yeah. I miss that stuff. I can't wait to go back to the theater. I guess that about wraps up our time here. Obviously, we love the theater going. If you have a great story or memory of a movie theater, please share it with us. I think Andy and I's our Baby Driver experience. We've told on the show
before. Talked about before. It's definitely my favorite movie going experience when the sound kept cutting out and then they kept restarting it and the audience started doing the sound effects when the audio wouldn't work and the screen would freeze and some guy would be like, "Bet you wonder how I got here." Yeah. Just like a flashback kind of thing. It was amazing.
Everyone united to make it a good experience because it was an advanced screening. So the movie's not even out for like two or three more weeks. Mm-hmm. So it's all movie critics and people that had just gotten sent special passes from Sony. And
we came so close to leaving.
Yeah.
And then I didn't.
I mean, it was literally almost an hour before they got this movie running. And so the first time it went out, it was playing the entire opening 15 minutes, which that's one of the most amazing action set piece car chases to open a movie with ever. And it's completely quiet. There's no audio whatsoever. And so we're all like, we don't know that this is not what's supposed to happen at first. We're just like, this is a weird choice for Edgar Wright. And then eventually some fucking hero in the back. I mean, it cuts to, you know, this like Honda Civic or whatever, Porsche, whatever the fuck it is. I'm not a car guy. And it like fishtails, drifts around a corner and some hero way in the back just starts going, and then we all kind of start giggling and we don't know what to do. And then some other hero off to the left, a cop, starts chasing him and he starts going, wee, 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 wee. And so then that becomes the thing. And we're all like, yes. And it's amazing. One of the best, like I've never felt more a part of a community than I did in that moment. It was really cool. And then one of the best movies I'd ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. So that was awesome. So absolutely, if you have a favorite movie theater experience or maybe even worst memory that you'd like to share, it's cringeworthy and wonderful. We want to hear it. You can always write us at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. Of course, we love reading your emails. Or we have something a little special we want to try. Steve?
Well, we do. It's, you know, it's the year 2021. It's time that we upgrade. We go away from
with
emails.
Two Ds.
Back to telephones. You can Streaming Things now has a Google voice number that you can call and leave us voicemails. So if you want to tell us about your favorite or least favorite movie going experience or anything else for that matter, henceforth, you can now call our number. That number is 859-757-4051. So yeah, just call that, leave us a voicemail, and you never know, you might hear your voice the next time you listen to Streaming Things.
And I'm sure Steve will be kind enough to put that phone number in the show notes as well, so you can just click straight to it if you want to leave us a message. We'd love to hear your beautiful voices. And on top of all that, please remember to follow us on Twitter if you're so inclined. You can find me at @CMichaelWrites.
I'm at @AndyMostDays.
And I'm Steve May 13.
Thank you so much. We love you all.
Happy streaming.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.